part. If you had trouble getting through, or if you've been having trouble getting through, please just call us and we'll get to you right away. Sometimes the phone will ring for a little bit. Let's see who we have here. Good morning. Who's this?
This is Bruce, Larry. How are you?
Oh, good. Bruce, how are you?
I'm good. I got a couple of the words, I think.
Okay.
Okay, the parade marcher, I initially was going with drummer. But then when you added that clue about Philadelphia, I knew it was actually mummer.
Mummer, indeed.
The mummer's parade.
The mummer's parade.
I don't really know what those are, but I know it's famous for Philadelphia.
Yes, they're kind of like sort of clown-like characters, I think. Sort of Philadelphia's Shriners.
Although I
may get in trouble for my accuracy there. I wish my dad were here to talk about that. But
was he a mummer?
He was not a mummer, but he loved the Mummers Parade.
Did he really? So here's a question: Is there a Poppers Parade?
Not yet. That's actually a good name for a radio program.
The Poppers Parade.
Yeah, actually, the Mummers Division. Oh my goodness, Mardi Gras. Oh, the closest comparison is Mardi Gras. But the Mummers Parade includes a fancy brigade as part of it.
Well, nice. Well, that's cool.
Yeah, it's nice to see.
And I thought like the Mummers Parade. It was all like I think that all the people in the parade are all men.
I believe that's true.
And even the women's parts are played by men. I understand.
And they're quite costumed. I'm looking at the parade right now, a picture. If anybody knows about this, please call us, 412-200-5975.
We need to know this.
We need to
know about the Mummers Parade. You'd think it was like in the same state as us. That divide between, east and west.
I love running into folks every now and then out of town, and they'll say, oh, you're from Pittsburgh. I know somebody in Philadelphia. Maybe you know them.
I would deal with people from work all the time, and they would talk like Pittsburgh and Philadelphia. Well, because where I worked was based in New England. Everything's so compact up there.
Yes.
And they would act like, Pittsburgh and Philadelphia are like a mile apart. I said, no, Philadelphia is almost between 300 and 400 miles away from Pittsburgh.
Yeah, we're closer to Wheeling or Charleston or East Liverpool.
Or Cleveland is probably the nearest big city to Pittsburgh.
Susie figured out the mattress feature firmer, and Aline and Charlie knew the roof part as dormer.
I know the roof part, too. Ooh,
oh, go ahead and say it.
Dormer,
that's it. Dormer, you got it. Just in the nick of time. Gail,
oh my goodness.
Gail had firmer. Mick. Now for the car, we were looking for a Hummer, but Mick adds Beamer. I like it.
A what?
A Beamer, like a BMW.
Ooh,
Beamer.
Beamer. That's cool.
Kathy. And Martha and Bill and Mike all knew Mummers. Mick had Mummer as well.
That's awesome.
Mummer's the word.
I'm actually heading east right now.
Well, enjoy.
But I'm not heading as far east as Philadelphia. I'm only going as far as Bedford.
You sound good.
Well, thank you. Thank you to the Pennsylvania Turnpike Commission for that fine, fine cell service.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. It all comes through the app or whatever. What do they call that thing that you stick on your windshield to avoid paying?
Oh, yeah.
100
well,
times.
I actually have that, too, the transponder.
Yes, indeed. Easy pass.
Well, I'm actually only as far as getting near New Stanton.
Well, have a good trip.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
Have a great day.
You too. Gail mentions they're using the Radio Garden app, which is a great way to listen to SLB. Ruth, it's so nice to hear from you. Now, here's a sound that you don't want your heart to make. It's actually, and Ruth spelled it correct in her message, I was going to give this as a clue, and then I looked it up. Ruth is right. It's M-U-R-M-U-R, as in murmur. But a charge for you, Ruth. It's good to hear from you. It was good to hear from you last week, too. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger, this is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade. Saturday mornings at WRCT Pittsburgh, WIUP FM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, KRDP Apache Junction, Goldfield Ghost Town, Phoenix, WSHA FM Grove City, WCUC FM Clarion, WNJR Washington, and slbradio.org/radio. That's Dan and Claudia Zanes with the song they dedicate to John Lewis, Let Love Be Your Guide. Coming up in just a moment, we're going to feature a Pittsburgh Concert Society honoree named Eleanor Edwards. You'll have a chance to hear a selection on violin from her. Also this hour, we will have students from Phipps Conservatory and Botanical Gardens Eco Leader Academy. few hellos to pass along. Vince and Braddock. Good morning, Vince. Also new Dormer and Mummer from the puzzles that we were playing towards the end of last hour. And Willie is in Reimersburg and requested a great song by Donovan called Atlantis, the studio version of Atlantis. And I took a look. We don't have it, but I will take a look for it next week. Willie, please contact us next week when you're listening, and we'll give you an update and play it. I think we'll probably be able to find it. Thank you so much for being with us.
The Saturday Light Brigade is made possible in part with support from the Allegheny Regional Asset District, putting Allegheny County sales tax dollars to work in regional libraries, parks, sports facilities, and arts and culture programs. Learn more at radworkshere.org.
Now, it's been a great pleasure to work with the Pittsburgh Concert Society for many years now, and we thank Antoinette Tuma and everybody at the Pittsburgh Concert Society for the work they do with us. I believe today we have Tim Marquette here from the Pittsburgh Concert Society, and you're going to get a chance now to first hear some music from one of the Concert Society's honorees, and then we'll talk a little bit. Her name is Eleanor Edwards. She is from Sewickley and attends a cyber school that is through the Quaker Valley School District. She is going to share with us Bach's Sonata in G minor, an adagio. Here she is, Eleanor Edwards. Eleanor Edwards here at the Saturday Light Brigade. How beautiful that sounded. And we'll chat with Eleanor a bit now. And tell me what you just played.
Yes, so I just played Bach Sonata No. 1 in G minor.
Nice. You just sounded beautiful. I'm curious about the violin you're playing. It looks special and maybe like it's been with you for a while. Is it an instrument that you have a relationship with?
Yes, it is. So it is a Antonio Borelli violin. It actually used to be my older brother's, but a couple years ago he did pass it down to me. But it's just an absolutely beautiful instrument, and I'm so lucky and grateful to be playing on it.
Yeah, it really is. It has a darker patina, and also in a nice way, you can tell that it's been played and loved. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a. What wood is used? Do you know? Offhand, it almost looks like a curly maple. It's probably not. It might be.
It does have a beautiful finish to it that darkens the wood. So. It is absolutely breathtaking. I remember when my brother picked it out, I fell in love with it, and then now I get to play on it. So
how did you pick the violin as an instrument?
Yes, so I come from a very musical family. Both parents played piano when they were younger, and then I have three older siblings, so I'm the youngest of four, and all of them actually played and studied music in college. So I had a lot to look up to. And when I was three, I started reaching for my sister's violin. And so started playing. And I've been playing for about 15 years.
Wow. And did you begin taking lessons with somebody outside of the family when you were young?
So I've actually been studying for 15 years with my teacher in Forest Hills. She comes from Moscow Conservatory. Her name is Rafina Yefimova. She's just been an amazing teacher and mentor, and she actually did teach two of my siblings who also played violin.
That's incredible that you've got somebody that has been able to sort of carry you along mm-hmm. the way or guide you mm-hmm. Along the way for all those many years. I would imagine, given your school situation mm-hmm. With cyber learning, are you able to play with different orchestras or ensembles? Does it free up your schedule to mm-hmm. do more music?
Yes, so that is the main reason that I did do online school. I have a lot more time to practice and have my private lessons every week. And I get to have the chance to play with my siblings as well. And then in 2022, I actually created my own nonprofit, which is called Vibrant Violin. And it is for early care centers for children. And then I also perform at nursing homes. So it's been something I've been really passionate about this past year, and I'm really looking forward to working more with it. So
that's wonderful. Now, bringing violins to pre-K centers or child care centers, are you playing there, or are you trying to encourage young children, just like you, preschool, to actually play violin?
Yes, so I'm just trying to share music as much as possible, share my gift with them, and hopefully encourage them to maybe pick up an instrument when they get older. I normally have about a 30-minute program that I perform to these centers, and it's a little talk that I give, and then I also perform for about 20 minutes for them, and they get to see my violin, and they can hold it. And just seeing their faces, and some of them have never seen an instrument, it's just truly a wonderful experience.
What kind of things do you talk about and beyond the instrument mm-hmm. itself?
I mainly talk about basically just explain what a violin is, explain a little bit about an orchestra and how that works. But it just depends on the age range that I'm working with. But when I go to nursing homes, I do like to talk a little bit about my background and then play some music. And if they have any suggestions, if I'm able to play it, I try my best to.
That's wonderful. For people who might be listening that either don't play an instrument or mm-hmm. have never even tried, and it could be that they're an adult or somebody who's younger, do you have any advice? I'm sure you can remember what it was like when you first began to learn.
I think it's never too late to learn some music, pick up an instrument. If you have the means to get your hands on an instrument, I would start. Music is beautiful, and it's a language, and you can connect to a lot of people through it. So, yes, if you could, I would definitely do some music.
Did you start on violin, or did you learn piano first?
I started on violin. I actually started singing when I was really little, and I used to sing at my teacher's recitals. And then I finally got a tiny little violin, and I would pluck on it, so without the bow. And then I graduated from plucking, and I got the bow eventually. So
I know a lot of kids, including me, would learn music and a bit of music theory through piano at first. You're going to graduate this year. Now, mm-hmm. your siblings, are they all older than you?
Yes. My closest sibling to me is 5 years older than me.
Okay. So, and they all went to study music?
Yes. They all majored in music.
Where did they go?
Yeah. So my sister, Elizabeth, she just recently graduated from the Juilliard School in New York City this past spring. And then my other sister went to the Royal College of Music in London. And then my oldest brother, who is 10 years older than me, graduated from Cambridge University.
You do have quite a path to follow. Do you?
Lots to look up to.
Yeah. Do you know what you hope to do after your senior year?
So I'm planning on majoring in music, performance, and I am currently touring and applying to colleges. So fingers crossed.
Good luck. I would ask you what your hope is, but I don't want to do that. You might not know yet, since you're still getting to know the schools. I shouldn't assume that, but am I right?
Yes, still very open-minded, and again, perspectives change as soon as you visit a school, but every school that I've visited so far has been wonderful. So,
what would you say? I just read this morning that West Virginia University is making some cutbacks in arts programs. Mm. And I'm sure you're aware of some of the changes at Brandeis University and some of their programs for graduate students. And I guess I'm curious how you would advocate for why it's so important that people have the chance to have music as part of their education, whether they're as accomplished as you are or just any student.
Exactly. And that's what I'm trying to do and share with my nonprofit is try and get kids and any ages just exposed to music, so that they get that exposure and that they can realize what a gift music is. And because I've had the privilege of getting to learn the violin and getting to play it, then I'm trying to share my gift with others, and hopefully they can share it with people that they know.
That's good that you're a strong advocate. I have high hopes for music. It really does connect people and can mm-hmm. bridge quite a few gaps, but it does pose a concern when you see schools having trouble making ends meet. Now, another great advocate for music is the Pittsburgh Concert Society itself.
Yes.
Can you tell me a bit about how they've supported you in the relationship and also the Young Artists Award?
Yes, it's been an amazing experience. And again, cannot say enough good things about the Pittsburgh Concert Society. All three siblings actually got the privilege of being their advocates as well. So I'm just so lucky to be able to be here and perform. And I cannot say enough good things about them. So,
excellent. Is there anything else you'd like to mention? Feel free. Also, if your nonprofit has a website mm-hmm. you'd like to mention,
it
feel
does.
Free
it
to do
It certainly does.
Do
it's vibrantviolin.org. And everything that you need to contact me is on my website. I also have a LinkedIn and Instagram. So if you are interested in hosting an event with me, I would love to do so. Just shoot me over an email, and yeah, we can get in contact. So,
vibrantviolin.org. Mm-hmm. Eleanor, it's really great to talk with you today. And am I right that your dad is here?
My mother's here.
Oh, your mother's here.
Yes.
Okay, I just saw out of the corner of my head, I saw somebody here, and thank you. And I have a note of Robert and Tim here. But what's your mom's first name?
Patricia.
Ah, well, I'm glad she yes. was able to make it. Thank you for coming here today.
Thank you so much for having
me. We just
me.
Got a wave in there too, which is great. And I really appreciate your talent. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
They used to tell me I was building a dream, and so I followed the mob. When there was earth to plow or guns to bear, I was always there, right on the job. They used to tell me I was building a dream with peace and glory ahead. But why should I be standing in line, just waiting for bread? Once I built a railroad, made it run, made it race against time. Once I built a railroad, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once I built a tower to the sun, brick and rivet and lime. Once I built a tower, now it's done. Brother, can you spare a dime? Once in khaki suits, gee, we look swell, full of that Yankee doodly dum, and half a million boots went slogging through hell. And I was a kid with a drum. Say, don't you remember? They called me out. It was out all the time. Why don't you remember? I'm your pal. Buddy, can you spare a dime? Spare a dime.
Tim O'Brien, great song. Brother, can you spare a dime? From an album called Oh Brother, Can You Spare a Dime? That includes quite a few songs from the Depression, in and around the Depression, done by a number of different artists. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square, along with Ricky Berger, this is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start. The Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings on a great network of community radio stations and internet radio stations and streaming services, including TuneIn, Simple Radio, Streama, Aha, just about any smart speaker, and our own slbradio.org/radio. That is the Red Stick Ramblers here at the Saturday Light Brigade. You're in the midst of our Youth Express Hour, and coming up, Sam Petrovich is going to be with us. And we talked about the Phipps Conservatory and Botanical Gardens EcoLeader program a few weeks ago, and we are going to talk about that program some more this morning and get a sense of Sam's engagement with it and what he's been up to. And that'll be coming up in just a few moments here at the Saturday Light Brigade.
The Northside Chronicle joins you in supporting SLB Radio. The Northside Chronicle is a free community newspaper that provides hyperlocal coverage of the people, places, and events in the 18 Northside neighborhoods of Pittsburgh. Details on the Northside Chronicle's photography contest for favorite Northside views and information about the Northside Chronicle's free weekly newsletter are available at thenorthsidechronicle.com.
We and Pittsburgh are excited to begin a brand new partnership to publish teen-authored articles, commentaries, podcasts, photo essays, and more in Pittsburgh, our region's accomplished source of information for parents, teens, teachers, and caregivers, as well as all who care about children and youth. The program is open to students in grades 8 to 12 who are interested in journalism, writing, podcasting, and digital media. However, no experience is needed. Learn about the program at our information center this coming Monday, September 18th, 4:30 to 6 o'clock at our Youth Media Center here on the north side. For additional information, slbradio.org/openstudios. Let me make sure I gave that to you correctly. You'd think I would know. slbradio.org/openstudio, singular. Now it's time for me to introduce you to Sam Petrovich. Sam, good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. I'm glad to be here.
And Sam just graduated from Baldwin earlier this year, class of 2023, and is in his first year at WVU and majoring in horticulture.
Yeah.
Have you always been interested in...
Oh, yeah. It's been quite a while since I was sort of first introduced to just plants in general. It was kind of funny how it started. I was probably in middle school. And I just saw this little Japanese maple seedling sprouting up in my mulch outside of the house, and I was like, "Wow, this is so cool!" I don't know what was that perfect spark there, but it just started something that totally snowballed, and here I am now working on a major in horticulture.
That's amazing. So it was an accidental
total
plant.
Accident.
Did you have another Japanese maple near you?
Yeah,
yeah.
There was just one in the landscaping. So it must have come from there, but...
It's amazing how, I mean, it happens in forests all the time, but you
right.
don't expect it to happen. I'm assuming you're in a suburban
yes.
kind of area. You don't expect it to happen there. We have, I mentioned it a couple weeks ago, it looks like a cornstalk,
mm-hmm.
Just in the middle of our yard, a
nice.
City-type lot, and it's like, but we didn't plant it. Where did this come
right.
from? And... they have these great, a Google image search is a wonderful thing.
Yes.
And my wife took a picture of it, and it's millet.
Hmm.
And we think bird seed, because we feed the birds a lot, germinated and might have
right.
Started
growing from there.
Yeah, might be the responsible party. But because we have no grass in our yard by choice and kind of this meadow, it's there.
Right. It's amazing to see what can just pop up.
Yeah, it's there and ready to go. So did you pretty much know that you wanted to major in horticulture early on?
Essentially. So I was also sort of interested in, like, biochemistry, chemistry in general, things like that. But I decided on horticulture since I knew that West Virginia already had such a great horticulture program. Perhaps if I went to a different school, I would have pursued that. But
that's excellent that you're doing it. What do you take in a freshman year horticulture class? I can't even imagine what the curriculum is.
So at the moment, it's mostly general education type stuff. So English, math, things like that.
Getting all that stuff out of the way.
But I have one class, though, that's actually related to my degree at the moment, and that's called Plants and People. So,
I know it should be obvious, but what? And I also know you're probably a week into it, but is it about? I guess what is it about? I can think of so many ways it could go.
Yeah. So of course. People have been using plants for how many thousands of years now? One thing that we've really just started talking about in depth is the beginning of agriculture. So how people first started using plants to sustain themselves, to create settlements, anything along those lines. And of course, that can continue on. I think we're going to do units on medicinal plants, how they work themselves into everyday lives, things like that.
It's fascinating. There's a lot. Well, it's rare that I have somebody I can ask this question of. I gather, at least from what I read in the news, a lot of plants seem to be becoming intellectual property. That.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Companies or individuals are patenting certain variations.
Right.
Even to the point where if you get an accidental, like the Japanese maple you just described, and if that accidental, is that the right term? Accidental?
I think so.
If that comes from a seed that is subject to those restrictions, that it could be an issue. Is that becoming a more and more of a issue and concern, the whole idea of who owns nature,
I think it is starting to become a little bit of an issue, at least for, household gardeners. Nothing's going to happen.
True.
But, larger scale companies, it becomes a problem. I think it's mainly an issue with, like, farmers, because they're not allowed to harvest the seeds from their crops if it's a given variety that's patented, and then they're not allowed to use those seeds and plant them again the next year. They have to rebuy all of their seeds each year, because that would violate the copyright.
That's huge. So if you're accustomed, I would imagine it's a practice for certain crops to use the seeds again, and you're prohibited from doing that. You are supposed to buy those seeds instead. It doesn't seem fair at all. In fact, it seems counter.
It does. It's very counterproductive, it seems, especially, if the idea is to, grow food for people or something that's, equally important. It just doesn't quite seem fair to copyright that and make money off of it when you could be feeding people. But
yeah, I could see if you were forbidden from harvesting the seeds and selling them to somebody else. Interesting. Well, we'll talk more and also talk about the Eco Leader Academy, but let's meet Leah Keene, who is also here. She's a senior at Mount Lebanon High School. Hey, how are you?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good. Tell me a bit about yourself, what you like to do.
Yeah, okay. I just started my senior year at Mount Lebanon High School. And I don't know, outside of school, I do a lot of reading. I'm in nature a lot. I like hiking. I do synchronized swimming, which I think is pretty interesting. I don't meet a lot of other people who do that.
No, I don't know many people that do that either. Yeah. Is there a team at Mount Lebanon, or is this a non-school?
It's just a club team. It's Pittsburgh Artistic Swimming, and I've just something I've been doing for a while, and I'm really passionate about.
What got you into that?
That's a great question, actually. I've always felt like the most myself when I'm in the water, and so I've been doing swimming for a really long time. And I grew up in like the Forest Hills, Braddock area, and there just happened to be a team there. And so my mom signed me up, and I was just kind of, there's like little 4 or 5 year old Leah swimming around.
I think I remember it because I grew up near there, and I think there's a long tradition in that area.
Yeah, it's been there for like 50 or so years. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. You mentioned enjoying nature and hiking. Tell me more about that. What is it that enchants you about being out in nature?
So many things. I think something that I really find beautiful about like the forest specifically, because that's where I do a lot of hiking, because there's just so many great forests in the Pittsburgh area and just like Western Pennsylvania in general. It's just like how different it looks every time you go into it. It really feels like, I don't know, like the world's like made anew every morning. And it's just so cool. You get to see so many different things. And as part of sort of what drew me to like the eco-leader stuff, just that interesting connection between humans and our built and natural environment.
Any particular hiking areas that you enjoy around here?
Oh, that's a really tough question. I love the Rachel Carson Trail. They have a trail challenge that you can do like every year around May or June. And there's different like, I don't know, I guess groupings of distances. And you can do either with like family and friends or by yourself. And you just go like you hike like a set distance and you try. It's like a little competition. And that's really enjoyable.
Sounds nice. Let me ask both of you if you have anybody you want to acknowledge or say hello to. You may or may not. I just want to be sure I ask you that, Sam. Anybody?
Nobody in particular. I'll just say hi to everyone.
There you go. Leah?
Yeah, I can't think of anyone.
Okay.
So,
you're never too old for a shout-out. I just wanted to be sure I gave you that chance. So let's talk about Phipps Conservatory's EcoLeader Academy and how it all went. Sam, do you want to start and sort of explain the experience? And may both of you attended some of the same things, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Then, but did you have a project that would be different? We'll find out, I guess. But I'll let the two of you, like, how did it start and kind of run us through it?
Do you want to go? Like, how did you get into it, Sam?
So I am a member of this sort of environmental committee. It's based in Whitehall. It's called the WCEA. And I don't know what exactly you want to call it, but whoever it is that's in charge actually pointed out the program to me. And I was like, oh, this is perfect for me. This is right up my alley. You know, this is absolutely something I would love to do. And it started from there. What about you?
My AP bio teacher, actually, she knows that I have a membership at Phipps because I'm there like every week. And she pulled me out of like out of class one day. She's like, Leah, I just saw this thing. You have to do it. And so I was like, of course. And I signed up because it sounded so fascinating.
It did.
Did you have something? Well, should we describe like what exactly we did for the EcoLeader Academy? I mean, we met with various people involved in like environmental science and just different aspects of, I guess, like the Phipps community specifically. Mm-hmm. And we learned a lot about things like environmental justice, sustainable landscaping and architecture. What else?
You know, I would say that just about every single week that we went, there was a new environmental related topic that we were able to discuss. You know, there was one week we did like pollution, water pollution, air pollution, things like that. There was another week we did a lot with environmental justice, which I thought was a very, very important topic to mention. You know, we got tours of the gardens, of the conservatory, got a little behind-the-scenes peek at the production greenhouses, which that was pretty interesting to see. But yeah, I think bottom line is that it was all about just all these different environmental topics.
Yeah, and it was a super hands-on experience too. I mean, I'm thinking about like the bioart unit that we did, just using like recycled materials and stuff. And it was really fascinating. We were always doing something and we were always very involved with the community at FIPS.
Tell me more about what you learned about environmental justice.
Okay. So I think it's something that a lot of people are probably aware of, but they just don't have the correct term to describe it by. I think a lot of people realize that typically you'll see factories and really big industries around places that are, you know, less financially fortunate, per se, or even in minority group areas, which is such a shame. In higher wealth areas, you'll see, you know, more parks, things like that. And I think that would be, like, the main idea of environmental justice is that we're putting all of these things, all of these negative environmental influencers in places that really can't sustain it. So I'd say that's what the biggest part of environmental justice is, but if you have anything to add.
No, yeah, there were two, I think, main aspects that we touched on, what Sam was saying, more of, like, at a community or local level, and then also, like, policy-wise, so thinking about sort of those more, like, companies or factories and thinking about the lawyers that they maybe have on retainer to help them deal with sort of environmental issues that arise, basically like a system of checks and balances for companies and factories. But then I think we focused the most on sort of it as like a community issue. So like in Pittsburgh, for example, like all of the like steel mills and things, so they're no longer nearly as operational as they were. They're located in areas that are generally, there's a disparity in the income levels and like the areas that a lot of the industry is located in versus the area that, say, benefits more from that industry. And we were talking about the epidemiological effects, so more like how like asthma is really high in various parts of the cities where there's like lots of air pollution from the industry that we put there. And then we talked too about how it's sort of like a slippery slope. What was the either there was like a card game and we did it was like homeowners versus like city people. So it was, we were just really looking at, it's a very intersectional issue and a very, very complicated one too. So what we were sort of trying to do was start to untangle it a little bit. And it was really interesting. I think it gave us some really fascinating and invaluable answers.
What was the card game? Do you remember?
I will do my best. It's been a little while, so I'm not sure if I remember it totally, but we'll see. We'll see what I can come up with. So basically, you were dealt a totally random card. And depending on if your card had an even number on it or an odd number, you would split up. And if...
And then like the sweets, too. So if it was like hearts or diamonds or clubs or whatever, you were also divided.
And so you played... You had different roles or attitudes depending on the cards you were dealt?
Yeah, kind of. And it was also, I don't remember the exact name of the person, but she was a professor at Pitt that came and conducted the thing.
Yes.
And so she had a split up. If you had an even numbered card, you were in the first group. And if you had an odd numbered one, you were in the second one. So we were divided from that. And then she would call out sort of various prompts. Like if your card's number is above six or and you like have an ace or whatever, something like that, she's like, you're a homeowner, so you can vote on this specific issue. And like, so it was more like that, creating these like these sort of randomized identities that show you when that seem, I guess, sort of divorced from the concept of like the environment in isolation. But when you put it together with the idea of like policy and stuff, it showed you how big of an issue this is.
It makes total sense. So a group of homeowners perhaps have more say and sway because of the way taxation works, and a group of people renting might not have as much say.
Exactly.
For example, that's very interesting in terms of opening up your mind to these issues.
I think the prompt specifically was, it was like we were voting on whether or not a power plant should be put in this.
Yeah.
I think it was in the low income area. That's what we were talking about. That's why the concept of the homeowners are mentioned. He's like, oh, you can only vote if you're in the homeowners association of this specific area. So something like that. That probably would have been a little bit more helpful to preface
but, really interesting. And then you think of money that's used to sway people to vote one way or another, and how that works, and it affects ecology and the environment. So were there projects? You mentioned hands-on activities. I seem to remember there's a culminating project. I am guessing they might have been different. Can you talk about this?
You should. Do you want to talk about yours first?
Sure. Okay. So just to give everyone an idea of exactly what the project was, everybody would sort of collect into a group of maybe four or so, maybe three, and sort of make this culminating project having to do with the environment, essentially. So what I did with my group was create a very small, very cheap hydroponic garden. So we were trying to show that it's really easy to create just a little garden that you could keep in your windowsill. So I think we used maybe a pencil box, like a plastic pencil box, and cut out the top and used rock wool. I'm not sure if you're familiar with that.
I am not.
Okay, so that's basically like rock fibers sort of pressed into a material that you can grow plants in.
Oh, I know what that. Now I know what it. Florist
yes.
use that.
It's used a lot in Phipps's hydroponic gardens. That's how we sort of found out about it, because we got a tour there.
Yeah, and so from there we planted some little microgreens inside of the rock wool and placed a light above that, and they started growing.
What makes something hydroponic?
I'm going to do my best here.
Okay.
I think, at least to me, what it seems like is just growing plants inside of water, that there is no soil present.
Ah, okay. Yeah. So rock wool does not... disqualify that from being hydroponic. I didn't know that, but I never thought much about it.
Usually you use a very small piece of rock wool, and that's just to be able to keep the plant in the right place in the garden.
It's mostly that the water is treated with things like phosphorus and nitrogen, and then it's like it has a correctly balanced pH or things like that, and then it's sort of using the water rather than like the soil. It's mostly to save space. You can more efficiently grow healthy vegetables.
So I've seen, in fact, a school I work a lot with has, I think these things are available. It's like a plastic, almost a tree-looking structure, but it has places to put plants.
Yeah.
And I think they're hydroponic the way it's done.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
That sounds so cool.
I'll show you a picture of it.
I'd love to see it.
I think those things exist. So you basically, from scratch, created this hydroponic...
Yes.
Very, very cool.
It was really impressive, actually. I remember seeing it on the summit, and I was absolutely taken aback because our tables were right next to each other, and I was like, wow, competition.
So what did you do, Leah?
So my group, we called ourselves Trash Can, and what we did was we were looking at pollution.
I see what you did there.
Yeah, you see? It's pretty clever, yeah. So what we did, we were all really interested in endangered marine life, especially with, like, global warming and just, I guess, increased industrialization. We see a lot of waste in the oceans, and just a lot of general harm is coming to our oceans. And that's something that we should all care about, because, you know, without the oceans, we wouldn't be here. But I digress. We were all really interested in marine life, like me, everyone in my group. And so we sort of had the idea to take some of the things, some pieces of trash or whatever, that typically harm animals in their natural environment and use it to turn it into a work of art. So what we did was we made a gallery, and we had several little boxes, I guess. And in each of those, we had built like a pseudo paper mache type animal in their environment. And everything was made entirely of recycled or reused materials.
Very cool and very memorable for people to see. I can't believe how quickly this has gone. We only have a couple minutes left. First, is there anything either of you would like to say that you haven't had a chance to say?
I'll think of it later whenever I'm back at home.
The only thing I can think of is that I'm just really grateful that I got this opportunity.
Yes, absolutely.
It was fascinating, and it was something I looked forward to every week.
Go out in nature. Enjoy the greenery.
Now, we know Sam is likely to be a horticulture major at WVU. I didn't mean to say it's not going to happen, but, but that's your intentions.
Yes.
Do you know what you want to do?
Yeah, I want to do biomedical engineering. So not really, it's a little divorced from environmental science, it seems, at first glance. But I'm really interested in neurodegenerative diseases. I want to study Alzheimer's. Hmm. That's what I'm really interested in, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And you'll, I think there are environmental aspects in everything you do. Here's one more question, which is much broader. If I gave you a magic wand to choose one thing of many that you could change, and it need not be related to the environment, it could be, and it need not be the only thing, but just one that might come to mind. It could be local, global, whatever. Do you have any idea what you would change?
This is a loaded question.
Yes,
wow.
It is.
give me a second. I have to think.
Wow. It's almost like any answer, as good as it might be, is still the wrong one.
Nah. It's just sort of what comes to mind first. Because people will be curious, I think.
Yeah. I don't know. Lanternflies have been on my on my nerves
there
lately.
There you go. That's perfect. I feel bad. I don't like to kill things.
Yeah, I know. I feel awful about it, but they're just as bad.
Yeah.
Ooh. On a less selfless note, I think if I could change anything immediately, I'd like to not be lactose intolerant.
There you go.
Yeah.
Why not?
Like to eat ice cream.
Very practical. Actually, you can take pills, but that's gotta be frustrating.
Yeah, it's just a little bit, like if I forget them. But on like a more global scale, as something with like the oceans or something, like coral bleaching is what I'm interested in. But also lactose intolerance.
No, I love ice cream. I love ice cream, but I was with a friend the other day who had to take a pill before having ice cream, and I was thinking, man, that would be a bummer. I'm so glad both of you could be here with us today.
Oh, yeah, and it's been great.
This was an honor. Thank you.
Please keep in touch, and we'll have you back again to see how things are going. Broadcasting live from historic Allegheny Square with thanks to Sam Petrovich and Leah Keene. This is Larry Berger, and this is the show that gets your weekend off to a good start, the Saturday Light Brigade, Saturday mornings at WURCT Pittsburgh, WIUP FM Indiana, WMCO New Concord, KRDP Apache Junction, Goldfield Ghost Town Phoenix, WSAJ FM Grove City, WCUC FM Clarion, WNJR Washington, and slbradio.org/radio.
Let that harmony ring up to heaven and sing. Sing, you sinner. Just wave your arms all about. Let the Lord hear you shout. Pour that music right out. And say, you sinner. Whenever there's music, you know the devil kicks. Cause he don't allow music down by the river Styx. You're wicked and you're depraved, and you all misbehave. If you want to be saved, just sing, you sinner.